British Public Radio.
The Radio Today programme with Audioboo.
Commercial Radio is leading the news again with the confirmation of the takeover of Absolute by Bauer. But while we wait for that all to play out, we're going to bring you this week another couple of interviews we did for the Radio Centre's 40th birthday, two stalwarts of commercial radio. Later on, Neil Fox, Dr. Fox, on his time with Capital and now Magic. But first, Les Ross, doyen of West Midlands Radio, whose name will always be inextricably linked with the late lamented BRMB. Les Ross, congratulations. The voice of BRMB, I think, in everybody's imaginations. What was BRMB like when it started? I mean, the story of commercial radio is usually told in terms of Capital and LBC, sometimes in terms of the Manchester stations and Liverpool, but BRMB, I mean, it totally dominated Birmingham, didn't it?
Yeah, I think it did. Yeah, I wasn't actually on BRMB right at the beginning. But I was there early enough, I suppose. In fact, they turned me down three times. So it's all right, I got over it. But they finally accepted me. Yes, I mean, it was, as all those early stations were, it was a trailblazer in every way. And a lot of the individual broadcasters, well, everybody involved, were kind of originators. They kind of had to be, really, to make the people of Birmingham have radio with commercials for a start, you know, when you think of what they had to establish. And in the teeth of a dreadful mid-70s recession, commercially speaking, wasn't exactly a thrillingly positive background to go against. But no, when I think of the individuals, myself excepted, they were all the first of their type, certainly, to be heard in Birmingham.
I think, as somebody who grew up in Nottingham, what I used to feel about BRMB was, as you drove into Birmingham, which, as you say, particularly in the 70s, was not a particularly picturesque place and not very confident, that no. The radio station made you think, wow, this place is great.
Yes, yes. The management there had obviously taken their cue from Australian commercial radio. The news editor was a Canadian, so kind of North American style. And I suppose it was kind of brash and then just slightly kind of anglicised, as it were. I think they got it kind of just about right. But with enough locality, myself, I'd like to say, and people like the legendary Tony Butler, you know, very local, but with that kind of injection of this is what commercial radio does. And of course, back then, if you listen to the early output of BRMB, doesn't sound anything like any commercial radio sounds now. It really was a local radio station. We did lots of great local stuff.
One of my favourite things that you did was something that wouldn't be exciting now because of Skype and Twitter and all the rest of it, but you used to simply ring somebody up
round
who
the
lived
world
in another
calls.
Country. That was all
seems,
it was.
It seems preposterous, doesn't it? Let's ring somebody up in Australia. That'll be fascinating. Well, it was then.
But it was great,
well,
wasn't it?
It was because it was maybe as much perception as reality, but of course, like all the best ideas, it happened completely by accident. I can't even remember the accident, but I was just doing a request show on a Sunday morning, linked in with BHBN, the local hospital broadcasting network, networked as it were. And one day somebody sent in a request for somebody in hospital. They said, except they're in Sydney General or something, you know. So why don't you ring them? Because we used to ring odd local people up, you know, especially if they were in hospital. So I must have just thought, what the heck? They gave me the phone number, so I rang them up, and it was 12 hours on or whatever, or 12 hours back. And, so we got them on the air, and then somehow or other, I think another letter or two came in, because it was letters then. So I ended up spending Sunday morning saying, drop me a line with your relatives' address, phone numbers, etc., wherever they are in the world. Of course, most of them were Australia and Canada to start with. Canada was good, and North America, because, of course, you were waking them up, usually. That was always fun. And then we got more bizarre places, like Papua New Guinea. Somebody actually in the middle of the jungle. But I got them on the phone. We also spoke to the captain of the QE2 once. We were ringing up a honeymoon couple on there and got to end up on the bridge talking to the captain for an hour. I don't know what the call cost. But, of course, people did think that, you know, well, certainly when we had a phone, when I was going to say when I was small, but It was, you can't ring any number beginning with a zero, you know, that a trunk call. So people did used to think it cost, you know, a gazillion pounds to ring abroad. It probably wasn't quite that expensive. But anyway, that's what we did.
How did you feel when you were moved away from BRMB, the FM service, onto what became Extra AM?
Well, I couldn't wait. And, of course, I went to my blessed programme controller at the time, BRMB, good old Mike Owen, and said, Mike, I want to go on the AM station. So after I picked him up off the floor, because I'd done the BRMB breakfast show then for, 13, 14 years, and I felt I was getting a bit old for it. I think I was 40. And I've always been a bit conservative with my musical tastes. I'm a child of the 60s, and I can't, you know, they never released a decent record after 1972, I'll give you that far. And slight exaggeration to make a point. And so I said, I'd like to go on Extra AM, and there was a bit of a conflab. In the end, I don't know how foot stamping I got, but anyway, I ended up on Extra AM on The Breakfast Show, and it was fantastic. Of course, I was sorry to stop, but I'd done it for a long time. You know, when you're that age, 14 years is forever, isn't it? Whoever does anything for 14 years now, 14 days usually people laugh. So it was brilliant and it was successful.
But then after a while, you then went back onto the FM.
Yes. Well, that was due to change of ownership of the stations. Capital Radio arrived and Richard Park said, we need you back on the BRMB Breakfast Show, because it was a relaunch of everything. I must have pulled a face, as they say. But anyway, I ended up back on the BRMB Breakfast Show.
And how many years did you do that?
Oh, another 93, 9 or 10 years. Yeah.
It's not a bad run, Les.
Oh, no, it wasn't a bad run. No. And I don't regret any of it, going this way, that way, the other way. It all worked out okay.
Do you ever think that you might have got onto the BBC if you hadn't had a Birmingham accent?
Well, let me telescope a story here. I never really kind of hankered to be on Radio 1 then, for instance, which was still relatively new, I suppose, in the 70s. Not really. It never really crossed my mind. I went to Radio, down to Radio 1 once. In fact, I think I went down because Johnny Walker invited me to sit in on his show. Because I knew him quite well. Because I beat him in a disc jockey contest in 1966. I just want that on record. And so while I was there, I spoke to dear Doreen Davis. And all I remember her saying, I don't think I was kind of particularly serious, but I just met her. And she was talking about the possibility of somebody like me being on Radio 1. And I remember she saying, who are you like? What do you mean, who am I like? Well, you've got to be like, and she named all the current Radio 1 jocks, starting with Emperor Roscoe, or whatever, I adored, and all the... And, you know, I suppose she needed to... Anyway, the long story short, I'm not like any of them. It probably was the wrong answer. Wrong answer! And then later on I heard that I was considered, seriously, as an outsider, you know, on the outsider list to replace whoever left The Breakfast Show at the time. But the long story short is, Derek Chinnery didn't like my accent. We're not having this accent on that network, I'm told, he said.
What do you think of commercial radio today, now that retired, semi-retired?
Well, there's more of it, which is not a bad thing, I suppose. If I'm frank, it hasn't developed the way, maybe that's too idealistic, I'd have liked it to develop. I just thought of US-style, commercial radio, which is still, when you go to the States and you go to all the marketplaces, big cities, or even out in the sticks, whatever, you know, your big city's got, you know, 20, 30 radio stations. They're all still fairly distinctive formats. They're all quite local in their own cultural way. And we didn't kind of go down that road. I think it's probably somewhere greater minds than mine know this stuff. But I think it's because, of course, radio, the background of radio was always network radio. You just asked the question about, you know, being on network radio or other, you know. I remember people saying, oh, which radio station? Oh, I'm on BRMB, or I'm on this. Yeah. Oh, you're on local radio as opposed to national radio. It just used to drive me mad about, you know, national radio. I mean, it's adorable, and the BBC and networks, we know, you know, wouldn't do without them. But somehow or other, it was always the giant there. And I just think, and then, you know, commercial problems here and there. So it's not developed quite the way I'd have liked, I have to say. But it's there, and, you know, I was part of it, and, you know, didn't completely wreck it.
Les Ross, congratulations, and thank you very much for coming.
The Radio Today programme.
Les Ross, one of Radio Centre's Roll of Honour. Still to come on this Radio Today programme, David Lloyd's Radio Moments and Neil Dr. Fox. First, though, here's Roy Martin with this week's Radio Today news.
The big news of the week is, of course, Bauer Media's takeover of Absolute Radio. Within minutes of the news being announced, radio professionals and anoraks alike took to Twitter to guess what happens next. Some suggest Planet Rock will appear on Absolute's frequencies. Others agree with the official line that the Absolute brand will indeed continue. Let's come back in a month or two to find out, shall we? MXR regional multiplexes in South Wales and the North East have closed with a loss of coverage for 10 stations. Some of the stations which were on the DAB multiplexes are being rehoused on local ones, but stations such as Choice, Gold and UCB and also Real Radio Access are no longer available. It'll also be a similar situation in the North West and the West Midlands in the coming months. And finally, BBC Radio 2 has a new sonic logo, bringing to an end the familiar sound heard on the station since 1998. If you haven't heard it yet, let me play you a quick sample. Gorgeous. And that's the latest from radiotoday.co.uk. I'm Roy Martin.
The Radio Today programme.
In these days of interactivity with the World Wide Web, make it easy for your listeners to share their voices with you via Audioboo. They simply download the app to their mobile device, record a boo, and send to your station. It's that simple. And just to prove a point, this ad was recorded as a boo and sent in from the corner shop. Audioboo, sharing voices with the world.
Thank you, Roy. Now, as promised, in conversation, here's Neil Fox.
Neil Fox, Dr. Fox, it all started for you at Radio Wyvern. What was that?
Well, gosh, yeah, Wyvern, what was it? It was one of those wonderful old ILR stations that was a beautiful old Victorian home, beautifully carpeted, but apparently the same carpet was in all of the directors' homes as well. hence why that little radio station nearly went down the pan, like so many other little ILR stations that I think thought when they got the franchise was a license to print money and realised it wasn't. But it was really good fun. It was where I started in 1985. Helping out, doing the records, you know, as so many people started in radio, just getting in a foot in the door, helping here, helping there, helping on the road shows, helping do whatever needed to be doing, phones being answered, prizes being sent out, just because I wanted to be in radio, I wanted to get that foot in the door, and I look back on it as extremely brilliant times, had an absolute hoot there.
And from a very early age, you'd been making DJ tapes, hadn't you, and aping people that you'd heard from America as well as from the UK.
Well, you know, some people always wanted to be a DJ from when they were a kid, and that was never really my thing. I wanted to be a spaceman, because I'd grown up watching, you know, the guys land on the moon, so I wanted to be an astronaut, clearly. I didn't really know how to get into being an astronaut, so I ended up being a DJ. I was going to go into the army, actually. That's the only thing I thought I might do, and fly helicopters, but then I didn't do that either. I did at school, and with a couple of mates, play around in bedrooms making some radio tapes. But again, it wasn't really with the idea of becoming a DJ. It just seemed like a good, fun thing to do, and I liked radio. I used to listen to Models, listen to Tony Blackburn do the Top 40 on a Sunday afternoon, and him and Arnold and the dog going woof on a Saturday morning, and whatever that show was called. So I've always loved radio without ever thinking I would do it as a living. And it was only when I got to university, really, and they had a university station there called University Radio Bath, started getting involved in that, doing a couple of shows, the thought this would be actually quite an entertaining way of making a living. But it's only really when I went to America in the early 80s to do a year of my degree there, my sort of placement period, and I heard all the American stations, which were so completely different from what we had in Britain at the time. So we'd got Radio 1 Radio 2, Radio 3, Radio 4. Commercially, we had had 10 years of ILR in the early 80s, and it was very much middle-of-the-road sort of... I thought it was quite dull, actually. When I was listening as a kid, it didn't inspire me at all. It was probably aimed at a much older audience than me when I was sort of 18, 19, 20. But the Americans, they were rocking, and they had these incredible stations. That there was this one called Z93 in America, in Atlanta, that just seemed to be everything they talked about, every record they played, every advert they did, every gig they talked about, every club night they were going to do was aimed at me and my flatmate Jim. It was us. It was our life, and we were 21, ready to take on the world and, you know, and go and have some fun. And I remember thinking, God, I was doing a business marketing degree. This station was marketed at us and people like us. And we had nothing like that in Britain. So I thought, yeah, I'd like to go back and do radio, but I wanted to do radio like that, that was a bit more young, fun, energetic, powerful, and marketed. Because I thought, as a business, that was amazing. So there was a business head on my shoulders, and there was also the sort of bloke that wanted to be the jock as well. With those two heads, I sort of started my little road into commercial radio.
How did you make that fantastic leap into Capital Radio, which was the station that DJs wanted to be on in that era?
Yeah, well, it's interesting. When I was 86 was my first full year at Radio Wyvern, and I remember thinking I'd sort of made my father a vow, and I'd said, when I'd left what he called a sensible job at age 24 to try and get into, take a full-time job at Radio Wyvern, which, you know, paid bugger all, but it didn't matter, it paid my bills, and that's really all that mattered at the time. He said, please tell me you have a plan. And I said, all right, my plan is that if I'm not on Radio 1 or Capital by the time I'm 30, I'll quit. Because I kind of get, if I can't do it in 6 years, I'm not going to do it, in my arrogant way that at a time, the arrogance of youth. But I made three demo tapes. I made one for Radio Luxembourg, I made one for Radio 1, I made one for Capital. Joe Sandilands, at the time, was the programme director of Capital, and it was far more female-based, middle-of-the-road, magazine-y style Capital was at the time, and said I was too young, loud, and not for them. Radio 1 said, this is quite interesting, come and have a chat. But you, and at the time they were going, you have no experience, sadly, so go away and get some more experience and we'll watch out for you. And then a guy called Phil Ward-Large, he got me in for an interview at Radio Luxembourg and said, I like it, have a job. So off I went to Luxy, and that was an amazing training ground. But I went there in February 87, and by September 87, luckily Richard Parker had heard me in Scotland, where you could pick up Luxy really well. He was coming down to Capital to start this brave new bold Capital, which needed a kick up its arse, and thought I'd be one of the new boys that could be part of that new sound. So I came down in September 87 and started at Capital and had 17 amazing years there.
Tell me how the Pepsi chart show started for you.
I'd done a couple of deps for the Nescafe chart show with the kid, and I could never quite understand why it was pre-recorded. How could you pre-record a chart on a Friday? Surely it's out of date. You've got to have the Saturday sales, haven't you? Well, clearly, yes. And I think that's probably why the Nescafe chart was a bit out of date. But it was a good start for commercial radio to try and get into a top 40. They realised part of the problem contractually, which was interesting, was that Radio 1, the BBC, had the contract for the official top 40, which had kind of always screwed commercial radio. So they had a chart that wasn't really the real chart. So people would refer to the chart, but actually they'd always refer to the official chart. So we had jocks on air talking about number ones that weren't the number, or should be number one commercially, but you know, it was a mess, basically. And then they had a very bright idea, why don't we just have the official top 10? And then 11 to 40 sales airplay. Sales were slipping a bit, but the top 10 still massively important. But what was really important were people playlisting, an ever-increasing amount of radio stations playlisting great records, and of course those records lasting much longer than the normal chart life would be. There were records clearly radio stations were playing 6 months on that were still, people would think of, I like that new song by, be like the equivalent now of someone going, I love that new song by Adele, someone like you, and you go, you know, it was out a year and a half ago, really? But it's still being played on the radio, so you still think it's fresh. And so that's where the idea of the Pepsi chart came from, sales airplay, but the top 10 sales. So actually, the top 10 was the official chart. So actually, suddenly we had some credibility. We had something new and fresh with the AirPlay element shoved in there as well. And when I took it over, part of the whole deal was that actually, let's try and make this something that the BBC haven't got. They were very much at 40, at 39, at 30. It was a countdown, pure and simple, and here's number one. So if we were going to try and compete with that, they had four times as many listeners, I think, in those days that we had on the commercial radio. We had to do something different. So that difference was, well, why don't I talk to... What's it like if you get a number one? Let's talk to the artist. You've got number one. What does it feel like? And feel what it's like to get in their heads. Give away great stuff. Amazing competitions. We also had a brilliant sponsor. And in the commercial radio terms, it just shows that if you get the sponsor right, it can make such a difference. Because Nescafe were a great sponsor, but you don't really associate with Nescafe with pop music. You did associate Pepsi with pop music. They had been through an era of sponsoring Michael Jackson, of Tina Turner, really huge global stars, and then came the Pepsi chart. So Pepsi and music had a link that had already been forged in kids' minds. So suddenly here's a whole chart of Pepsi and pop music and me holding it all together in the middle and your favourite stars and winning good stuff. It just worked. And so the figures went up and up and up. And then, you know, after a pretty short time, we overtook Radio 1 and it just kept on going. And it was a fun radio show. And I think all the radio I've always tried to do is it's got to be entertaining. It has to be fun. Otherwise, there's just no point being on. Just back-to-back music is okay, but it's dull. I can get that on my iPod now.
During that period, you used to dep for Tarrant, the Chris Tarrant, a very famous breakfast show on Capital Radio. And I think most people thought that you would eventually take that show over.
Yeah.
That didn't happen, though.
No, it didn't, actually. And I think there's part of me was, you know, peed off when that didn't happen, because I thought that was probably the thing that was going to happen. It was really hard depping for Chris, because I was, you know, 15, 20 years younger than Chris. So, and I did my thing. I was Dr. Fox. I did the surgery and the chart. And most of my audience was a different kind of audience, probably, to the normal Capital Breakfast Show. So it was always quite hard doing the breakfast show and depping, because he was brilliant. He is brilliant. You know, he was a brilliant breakfast broadcaster. And that was at a time when there were, you know, few other competitors, really. And that was the bee's knees. It really was a superb breakfast show. And always pretty big boots to fill, I have to be honest. I did think, you know, I'd thought about lots of things. You know, I had an interesting offer from the BBC at one point to go over there and do some maybe breakfast radio over there and some chart stuff. But, you know, contractually, that sadly could never happen. I did ask my boss at the time. I got an interesting reply. But that's another story. But I stayed at Capital and I stayed with commercial radio and had a brilliant time doing it. I thought perhaps I might move into Tarrant shoes. It didn't happen after a time. And you know what? These things happen. One door, you know, closes and another one, well, you kick open and you make sure. There were always other options, luckily. And actually, where I moved into, I'd always been having conversations with Richard Park at the time, who had been my boss and had brought me to Capital. He had been working at Magic and thought, you know what, we haven't really got a breakfast show at Magic, but we need a breakfast show at Magic, and I think you could come and do this. And, you know, as long as you understand it's probably going to take a few years to sort of get this thing really going, and don't expect overnight miracles, I reckon we could really forge something pretty good, which we started to do, and I'm still there.
Do you think of other commercial radio breakfast shows as your competitor? Or do you think of Radio 1 and Radio 2? Or do you not even think about whether you have competition?
No, I'm very aware of my competition. When I'm sitting there on air doing my show, I'm never really thinking about them. Clearly, I'm thinking about my own show. But they're all competition. People have a choice when they're listening to the radio. They're not thinking which commercial radio station should I listen to. They're just thinking, which radio station am I going to listen to? There are some people, probably an older audience, that might go, I'm never going to listen to commercial radio, because they've never grown up with it and don't want to, and that's fair enough. But for that's a small percentage of people now. I think we've lived with commercial TV and commercial radio for such a long time. It's all about whether you like the feel of it and like the content, like the music, and like the broadcaster, I guess, the feel that show's putting out. All commercial radio, from my boss's point of view, is the one that they will really look at in the radar, because clearly those are the stations that potentially are taking my commercial audience, and that affects the commerciality of our station and of my show. So, yes, I personally want to beat Chris Evans. I want to make sure that we kill Grimshaw. And I want to make sure that, you know, it's very difficult to beat Radio 4. That's such a different ball game, and they do such a brilliant job. You can't really compete with that. It's you know, it's chalk and cheese. But, yes, so I look at the BBC competitors as competitors for my breakfast audience, clearly. Commercially, I know my bosses, they will say they will disregard those because... commercially, they need to look at what's happening on Capital and Heart and Kiss and Choice and Smooth and anyone else.
So the future for you, are you happy to stay with what we would now think of, I think, as a sort of heritage-style breakfast show? Or have you got other plans to do either other radio or other online, on-demand audio, other schemes?
But, you know, there's always part of me that there's... I have a production company of TV formats, and that's going very well, and I'm really enjoying that. But, you know, every day I get up and I do feel blessed that I've been doing this now for 28 years, radio... I still really enjoy going to work every day. I still really enjoy being on the radio. I think I hate pre-recording shows. So much voice tracking going on. Oh, my God. I know it works. I know it's simple commercially. You can knock off 100 shows in an hour or whatever. They're boring. The problem is, you know, radio needs personality. Commercial radio has gone through Let's Play 10 back-to-back. And you know what? It's going to kill the ratings, I think. Ultimately, what we need is we need people. They don't have to talk bollocks all the time. They don't have to be waffling on. What they need to be doing is needing to have a relationship with the listener. That's something you can't get from your iPod or from Spotify or from anywhere else. You need to have radio, is a relationship. That friend on the radio is such an old cliche, but it's so bloody true. And that's why people like us when they're working or in a car or doing some homework, because they want someone else there and they quite like that other person picking the music for them. So they don't know what the next song coming up is. Because if I know exactly what song's coming up next, I can get that from my playlist on my iPhone. You know, what I want is something else that, oh, that's surprising, I haven't heard that for a long time. Or that's new, that's exciting. Or I didn't know that bit of information, or that's a great gag, or wow, someone's playing tomorrow, I forgot that, I must get a ticket. All those things that you can get from the radio, from that conversation with a broadcaster, that guy or woman on the radio, an increasingly number of female broadcasters, thank God, which is great. So I still think that's the conversation that radio will always have, and that's why I like doing it live. People call me a heritage breakfast show, an old school breakfast show. Do you know what? I don't think there's anything old school about what we do. You know, maybe heritage because I'm heritage, because I've been around a long time, but we're on there with the latest technology, we're on Facebook, we're on Twitter. You know, Magic might be playing slightly older music, but doesn't mean we're old and we don't think old. And I think that's a very important difference between, say, a station like Magic and a station like Gold. We're not on Time Warp here. We know we are a contemporary modern radio station, living, eating, breathing in London and a 2013 UK. Just the choice of music we're playing and maybe the kind of things we're talking about slightly relate to a slightly older audience rather than, you know, a young audience. But to be fair, the slightly older audience are the ones that have got some money, and commercially we have the most amazing audience and a spread of audience that commercially really works. And ultimately we have to think we are a business at the end of the day. We are a business, we're an entertainment business. So we have to be entertaining, and then people will listen to us, and then we can sell our airtime. But we are a business, and of course we always have to remember that. And people that get sniffy about that, you think, well, someone's going to pay your bloody wages, and you need to, if there's no one's listening, you got no business. Absolute. Okay, and so there comes a problem that, you know, you go, if your audiences are going down, people will not buy. And so, you know, that's what you have to think about. You've got to try and get people listening to your station. That's no different from any other brand, whether you're selling Mars bars or cars. If people aren't buying your product, right, you're not going to be doing very well in business. And that's what we always have to remember in commercial radio. I've never worked for the BBC, and I'd love to spend a week in the BBC to see how different that mentality must be, because if you don't ever have to really worry about your audience and your numbers and whether it's working as a business, I wonder what drives you to make it better and bigger. Perhaps I'll never know.
We could go on for ages. Neil Fox, well done for being one of the Radio Centre Roll of Honour. Thanks.
Thank you very much.
Very much for talking to us.
Pleasure.
The Radio Today programme with Audioboo.
Thank you, Neil Fox. It's the Radio Today programme, and here's this week's Radio Moments with David Lloyd.
You're tuned to Radio Caroline on 199, your all-day music station.
The voice of Simon Dee. It's 4 years now since we lost him. Simon was surely one of the first great rise and fall radio stars, a radio, then a TV career which came crashing down around him. Simon was born this week in 1935.
Listening to the live programme from London, it's just coming up to 12:15, and here with Midday Spin is Simon Dee.
Thank you, Brian. Hey, you made that last, didn't you? Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. No time, no sig. Unbelievable first record.
Simon Dee. In the last few days, we've heard the news of David Jacobs' retirement, and it was 29 years ago when David concluded his stint on Radio 4's Any Questions. He made way for John Timpson. In those days, any Prime Minister on the panel would watch his language, but that wasn't the case when David Cameron guested on Absolute Radio this week 4 years ago.
And I think the trouble with Twitter, the instantness of it, is I think there's too many twits might make a twat.
Christian O'Connell in famous conversation on Absolute Radio.
In 15 years of radio, he swore more than any guest. Now, I've interviewed Liam Gallagher.
Well, the new audience figures were out a few days ago, but this week, 21 years ago, saw the last ever Jikra figures. Now, Jikra was the currency before Rajar. And in those Jikra days, you may remember you had to collect your own figures by hand at the door. Capital London reached 34%, Melody at 9%, Air 24% reach, Midlands Radio West, as was all lumped together, 39% reach. This week, 2 years ago, and a new voice on XFM Breakfast, and a job he'd dreamed of.
Danny. Danny, come on. Danny, it's me, Dermot.
Danny, wake up. Come on, it's the OC. It's Christian.
Danny Wallace, Richard Bacon here. You need to get up.
Danny. Danny, you fat lump. Wake up. This is no way to start a breakfast show career. Trust me, Taran, I know these things. Wake up, you fat git. Get out of bed.
Danny Wallace making his debut on XFM this week just 2 years ago, now replaced already by John Holmes. 1925 now, and this week they turned on the Daventry transmitter. It was the world's first long-wave transmitting station. It was the most powerful in the world. It brought radio overall to 94% of the population, and that huge transmitter launched with a poem. This week in 1945, though, a new station on that long wave.
Good morning, everyone. This is the BBC Light programme on wavelengths of 1,500 and 261 metres. It's the first time we've said those words, BBC Light programme, which we hope are going to mean for you now and in the days to come, all that is best in radio entertainment from 9 o'clock in the morning to midnight.
The early moments in the Light programme this week in 1945, the service which evolved eventually into BBC Radio 2. Aberdeen now, and it's 1981.
I'm Joe Buchan, and I'd like to welcome you to North Sound. We're Britain's 27th independent radio station, and we're broadcasting to northeast Scotland. In a moment, Bobby Hayne is your host for The Breakfast Show. But first, the news. There's been more rioting in the Toxteth district of Liverpool. The first international football festival...
The franchise was advertised as Aberdeen and Inverness, and we won... In the end of the day, we were offered Aberdeen only, which clearly I personally was delighted with, because I didn't see us being able to manage Aberdeen and Inverness from Aberdeen with ease.
The launch of North Sound. At the beginning, it used to go off air at 8 o'clock at night into a... Nicky Campbell started there too, didn't he? The relationship between presenter and producer is rather like husband and wife in so many ways. In that sense, John Walters was John Peel's wife from 1969 onwards. John Walters died this week 11 years ago.
And then every Saturday on Junior Choice, Uncle Mac would have to do Sparky's magic piano. He'd just sit down at the piano, Sparky. And the piano would say, "Oh, you'll play anything you ask me to play."
John Walters. This week in 1977, the IBA, then the Commercial Radio Regulator, knocked on the door of Beacon Radio in Wolverhampton. Their report later said they were disappointed. Disappointed with local content, religion and care from older listeners.
The music is the sunshine.
16 years ago this week, this chap arrived at Radio 1. Number one
in London. Good evening. 95.8. I am Chris Moyles. Capital FM. Now, before we start, let's say a big thank you very much to Neil Long. A fantastic show. Thanks, Neil.
Thanks, mate.
And you're back again tomorrow night, obviously.
Indeed.
On the overnight shift.
Absolutely.
After me.
Chris Moyles on Capital, from whence he moved in 97, taking the early morning show on Radio 1. So, with BBC Southern Counties emerging from BBC Sussex and Surrey this week 19 years ago...
Radio Brighton.
KCFM launching in Hull this week 6 years ago, Radio Durham launching 45 years ago, and Ocean and 2CR evolving into Heart's South Coast 3 years ago. Those are this week's Radio Moments. Radio
Moments! Thank you, David. This has been a TDC production by Jamie Taylor. I've been Trevor Dan. More next week. And I wonder if by then the Jack stations will have become part of Bauer's empire. Jack Bauer. A 24-hour station, of course.
The Radio Today programme with Audioboom.